Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hut in the Clock. Noon on a Wednesday. That means it is Hutton O'Clock. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow is with us. Hutton, our favorite time of the week. Appreciate you for stopping by. Want to get into some Titans talk and your thoughts on the coaching search. But before we get into that first, the NCAA is investigating Tennessee for potential NIL violations. Just your initial thoughts on that, what we've seen come from it, Dante Plowman's response, and what do you think will come of all of this, not just for Tennessee, but for college football as a whole?
Yeah, so my initial response anytime, Caroline, great to be on with you guys, Willie D. May, same, is I don't know what power the NCAA currently has. I mean, if you bow up, correct me if I'm wrong, the face of college football right now with the trophy are the Michigan Wolverines, right?
Correct.
Yep.
They stood at the podium afterwards, and Jim Harbaugh claimed innocence. I mean, they allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, so
there was nothing they could do about it.
Chat, exactly. And I don't know if there's anything they can do about this because I don't know what power the NCAA currently has. Chad and I were discussing this yesterday on Hot Mic, and I just, because we were trying to figure out, like, why, if you're going, why you go after the program that was 100% helpful with the previous investigation. The NCAA said that, by the way. Not anyone wearing the orange hat said that. Right. The NCAA admitted that. And I said, if I'm just trying to be the 30,000 foot view of this, the NCAA would, in that situation, had the perceived power because Tennessee fully cooperated. Michigan didn't at first. They did not with Harbaugh and company over the quote-unquote hamburger, which was more than that. And they still end up winning the title, and it doesn't really matter in the end because they are the champions regardless of what happens in the future. They won the national title. And we even heard from Baker, who said, oh, yeah, I mean, they want it fair and square. Again, I'll just go back to that example, and I think to myself, well, Tennessee fully cooperated, and they had the perceived power, and they're trying to do it again, but I don't know why they pick and choose where they do this, and I'm not ultimately sure what comes of this based on that, because you have the states involved, you have all the collectives, and the fact that in 2021, they stood back. They bowed down and they said, hey, we can't do this. We've got too much going on in the court system. It's up to the individual program, up to the individual conferences that you're a part of to regulate whatever you're going to do and come up with the guidelines. By doing that, I don't know how they retroactively turn around and do anything regarding how this system currently plays out. And it's a system that needs regulation. But unfortunately, the NCAA has already admitted they're incapable of regulating anything.
Right. That I think that we all would agree that, yeah, standardization would be great. Regulation would be great. But what can the NCAA do? So, Hutton, how long do you think it is before we look at the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, maybe the Big 12? Who knows? These conferences potentially joining forces and breaking away from the NCAA.
Well, I think it's sooner rather than later, Caroline, and you guys can disagree, but I mean, the collectives are already banding together as one group. You've seen the different facets of how things funnel through on three and the different branches of this entire the entire monster that has been allowed to just take off. And I also say this, the rights to the college football playoff are coming up. In 2 years after we began the 12-team playoff, And based on all the money from the networks that's being devoted, the billions that's being devoted to the NFL, I think the next big wave of money is coming from the streaming services, Amazon, Netflix, and more. And whenever that money comes in, that wave of cash, I think that's whenever we see a big shift in the haves and the have-nots. We've already seen it, but I mean like a truly major shift. And I won't be shocked if we see a NCAA football players association, because I think that's ultimately where we're headed for the piece of the pie, which is why the NCAA is ultimately looking into all of this. They're trying to have the power so that they keep the power with the money that's involved in the big business of college football and college athletics.
What do you think we could ever have a system? You got me thinking when you said the collectives are starting to sort of mobilize and get together.
Yeah, they allowed the Grove Collective from Ole Miss to represent all of them on Capitol Hill, for instance.
Okay. Do you think we could ever get, I don't know if I would say the union, it's some sort of unionization of all of the collectives, like you certified to be in the game, and there can be some transparency of, okay, here's how we do this. Here's how you can find out what your value is as an NIL person. A school can have an idea of what it's going to take, sort of create a market where everybody kind of knows what's going on, rather than a lot of the spy games and obvious stuff going on with tampering and on both sides, right? Manipulating the system.
Well, the collectives, speaking just through the Grove Collective on Capitol Hill, they admitted there that they were open to regulation. Now, they don't necessarily agree with the regulation that's being proposed by Senator Tommy Tuberville on behalf of what Charlie Baker and others are pitching through the NCAA. But it's not like they want the state-by-state situation that they have, because some collectives are handcuffed based on certain rules or laws compared to others.
And it's based on state law, right?
State law, right.
The differing state laws,
No doubt. And so if you're comparing all that, they would like some regulation with that. I don't think that's asking too much. And again, I don't think that they are against they don't want the wide open wild, wild west. What they don't want is the to be reined in to a point where the collectives are just discontinued and everything funnels through the university, which is the NCAA. And you know the other part of this, Willie, and it's a segue, but it's a part of all of this, is the money allocated through the NCAA and through the athletic departments for coaches and administrators or staff members who are no longer a part of the university that are still getting paid. The average athletic budget in the Power Five right now, 9% of that goes to the athlete. And 42 to 44.5% of the average athletic budget is going towards buyouts based on fired staff members, administrators, coaches. It's insane.
That's not a good
part system. That's broken is you are paid to fail in college football if you're a coach, just point blank. And you don't have to really accomplish all that much to get a raise. Raise season exists because of all of the buyout money that is across college football. And they're crying poor, which is also laughable. And I'm not trying to advocate solely on behalf of the student athlete, quote unquote, but I am looking around going, man, I mean, if you think about what Jimbo Fisher is getting, it is kind of funny to look at like all the jokes that were made about Texas A&M and buying all these players when they're literally paying Jimbo Fisher not to be a part of it. And they're not even referencing that. And that's just the big example, but it's across the board. And what coaches are getting paid and what they're not getting paid.
I know the government is getting involved to some degree in this. I just wonder, can they help figure this out, or are we better off not even having them involved? I don't know. Like with these lawsuits and senators involved, is that really going to get us where we need to go?
I think that's the only opportunity for some joint decision that everyone can possibly agree on is some federal legislation. Chad and I have talked with Coach Tuberville. And he still wants us to call him Coach multiple times. And each time, I mean, it's a headache. I mean, he's trying to have a bipartisan a bill passed, and it's just difficult. It takes time. I mean, it's the government involved, you know, it's the minutia of everything and every word and how it's phrased and who's getting what piece of the pie. And I think it's important that they actually have different voices in that bill, where for the first time, collective, the last time that they were heard was 2 months ago, I believe. They were on Capitol Hill. That was the 10th or 11th time they were on Capitol Hill for a hearing. And that was the first time that a collective had been in front of them being questioned. That's also, by the way, the first time that the NCAA president had been present for a hearing. So it's ludicrous. It's crazy. It's dumb. And at the same time, it's needed, but it's a process that takes way too much time because for whatever reason, lawmakers like to meet for the sake of meeting instead of meeting for the sake of doing.
Yeah, I think everybody in corporate America could probably relate to that, but you would at least hope that the powers that be were being a little bit more productive in those meetings.
Well, and the state lawmakers, by the way, it actually benefits them to get something done quickly.
Yeah.
Because if you do, that's the law, you're going about it, and you're improving the tax dollars and everything else through your state. So, you know, you've got all the states coming together and trying to determine what's going to happen in college football. There are a lot of different factors involved in all this. And some people, you know, it's a great example of how many conferences didn't trust the SEC and the ESPN. Whenever the first time we heard about expansion to 12, no one really wanted to just let Greg Sankey be the voice of it because they didn't trust him or ESPN based on the fact that Texas and Oklahoma were bouncing to the SEC and all the money was headed to the SEC whenever ESPN got the rights instead of CBS. To me, it's the same thing. If you're looking at what Texas wants, what Alabama, the state of Alabama or Georgia, what they want compared to, you know, what we may see in the state of Kentucky, which is, you know, a basketball state. I think it's way different and you want different things involved in that bill.
Jonathan Hutton is with us, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, looking at the Titans defensive coordinator search, so far the only name that I have seen, and if I've missed some things, somebody please correct me, but the only name that we have seen arise is Denard Wilson, who is the secondary coach with the Ravens. What do you make of that interview, the fact that that's the only name that we've seen come up so far, and the fact that he has not been a defensive coordinator so far in his career?
I'm kind of surprised by that last aspect because I think it is a crucial hire from this regard. I'm not worried about Callahan wanting to come in and call plays specifically. Mm-hmm. I think it is extremely difficult to be a first-time head coach, call your offensive plays, manage the NFL game during the game, challenge plays, and just know just quick situations, game situations, what's going to happen, while also trying to have the opposing defensive coordinator chase plays two or three plays in advance. You're setting defenses up for what you're doing. He's going to have a great eye in the sky for him, his offensive coordinator. And number two, he's going to have a head coach of defense. Where you don't also want to, everything I just listed, also have to say, why is the communication lacking on the defensive side today? Why did the game plan not work? What are we doing to adjust? How are we fixing this? Who's coming in at what time? We're getting beat up on the defensive front. We're going to make a switch to this. There's a lot of head coaching decisions that go on. And when you have the veteran defensive coordinator, I think it just helps you in that regard. It's a crucial hire from that specific stance because normally your first staff isn't the staff that leads to coaching longevity. You make adjustments after year one when you figure out certain fits or certain guys who didn't necessarily live up to whatever expectation you had bringing them in, or someone else becomes available, and then you adjust your staff accordingly. This is one that he's got to hit on. And it can be a younger coach. It can be a version of Brian Callahan for the defensive side. But I just assume that it would be more of a veteran of the defensive game than someone who hasn't called plays before specifically. I don't know if you guys agree, but I also would expect
that you.
Down in Mobile, there's a lot of the discussions going on about that spot.
Hut, I asked this in general this week. This is my question of the week. When you have a brand new coach who is a first-time head coach and you've got a very young first-time general manager only in his second year, and you have a team that's in a serious transition with its roster, you start to list, okay, who are my best assets right now? It's a pretty thin list, right? And I looked at the odds makers. The Titans are, let's just call it 100-1, right? If the Carolina Panthers are the biggest long shot next year at 150-1, I'm just going by Jimmy Shapiro and his latest, whatever he works for now. I get these emails from him. 150-1.
He works for whoever he wants to. Jimmy's the man.
Yeah. So the Titans are in that next group of long shots at 100-1. How would you message it from the top in terms of your messaging to your fans, to the media, your PR? Is it okay to say we're in a rebuild? Or do you have to sell hope and maybe, you know, to a degree, put them in a tough spot, set expectations when really the bar should be pretty low to start with?
I don't know if you use the word specifically, Willie, but just because of optics and the perception of whatever they're about to announce with the new stadium. Here's the deal. Common sense tells you that's what they're doing. And I think the perception, the optics, you can send that message this way. Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill are no longer on part of the Tennessee Titans. Like that in and of it, and Kevin Byard's gone. I mean, that in and of itself sends that message with a younger team, with a young coach and a young general manager. And I also look at the Houston Texans, a 3-win team that turned around and won the division. And I don't get the sense that they want to use the word, even though they're going to use the word internally. And I think most fans would understand that. But I also get just being blunt about what you're doing. The Predators did this, right?
And then I'm thinking about how they did it. They didn't say we're tanking, and they're not tanking. But they reset the bar. And kind of said, give me some time here. We're looking at the big picture here. We're not exactly sure what's going to happen this year. I think there's a way to do it to where you still have hope, right? You're not saying turn off the TV, don't watch our team. But you're saying here are some young, exciting guys. We got a young coach, and we're trying to build around that. It may take some time.
I'm all about being the version of the organization that wants to be point blank and honest, right? I think they're turning a page on less grouch and more blunt honesty, maybe, and the development. I think you can do it. You set yourself up though if you're not showing progress, because you have to show progress in year one of this. You do. You have to show.
But what's progress going from 6 wins to 8 wins? I mean, that's a scary thing. They won 6 games, and there's a chance they might have to go backwards to go the 2 steps or 3 steps forward.
Well, I think it's more about developing the talent. You know, how many times did we sit on the show here and discuss how are they actually improving their roster on practices during the week, right? And we see the development. We see the chemistry grow instead of take a step back or just stay in neutral. I think that's more imperative than the wins and losses. If you're going to actually just be point blank, hey, we're rebuilding and here's how we're going about it. I think they've already kind of told us that, and they should have done this last offseason but chose not to. I'm all for the way Henry went out in the regular season. I thought it was a great send-off. But again, like they were 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And we could discuss and tell and see how they were 1 foot in, 1 foot out. I think you can see where they're both feet into the rebuild process now, and they've set themselves up with all the money allocated and the high draft pick to actually go out and begin that process and show the progression that I'm talking about. They have to be in December of this year, headed towards a spot where they feel like they're really taking a big step forward in 2025, because you can't use the word and then just fall flat on your face and end up with what they did when they traded the number one overall pick and Jared Goff was drafted. I think it's important that they're more of a version of they're a better version of who they are right now, even though they're a ways away roster wise from being where they need to be to compete. And hey, with the money that they have, they're allowed to go out and prove everyone wrong and show that they're really good at talent evaluation and acquisition. That's the other thing too. I wouldn't use it yet until we see what they've done.
Yeah, let's see how they. Let's see how smart they are with that money. It doesn't mean you have to spend every dime of it, too. You have to spend it smart.
That's true.
Okay,
that's
so true. Along those lines, what percentage chance do you think Derrick Henry has of coming back? I say it's less than 5%.
I was going to say less than 10, but I'm more along the lines with you. I mean,
Caroline's a little different. Caroline's a little higher.
Well, let me.
I don't.
I'm going to pull.
I'm not
going to
say that he's coming back.
No. I'm just saying percentage chance.
I'm
more along the lines of Willie, but what would you say, Caroline?
I don't know if I could put a percentage chance, but my thing was Brian Callahan just didn't close the door on it. He didn't say, yes, absolutely, we're bringing him back, or the way that he sounded didn't sound like, oh, no, there's no way we're going in that direction. He just kept the door open. I think it all comes down to business.
Well, there's two things here. Number one, from the player perspective, I don't know why Henry would want to be back specifically with this roster because he wants to win a Super Bowl. He said that. I'm putting myself in his mindset there. That's number one. Number two, Callahan was asked to describe his offense and what he wants to see from his offense with the Tennessee Titans. And this is how he started his answer. We want to be great in detail in the passing game, route definition, route spacing, want to be able to complete balls at a high percentage. That's always going to be the goal. Then he gets into the run game. This is a totally different Tennessee Titans organization just by that sentence and the way he answered that question. He gets into, believe me, we want to be physical up front. We're not saying we don't want to run the game, abandon the run game. But he starts by saying we will be great at detail in the passing game. This is something we've never seen since the Titans moved here. I don't know of any answer that's been close to that. And because of that, that's the opposite of what Derrick Henry brought to the team. Again, it's just perception of who they want to be and how they want to be defined. That's exactly what he just said, and I don't think Henry fits that mold. I think they need another version of Spears, and I'm basing that off of what we see in San Francisco and what we see in their backfield.
Jonathan Hutton, appreciate you for stopping by. We'll be listening to you and Withrow on Hot Mic.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it. We have the Attorney General coming on later today as well, so we'll be speaking a lot on the lawsuit and the response from the state of Tennessee to the NCAA.
Juicy stuff there, Hutt. We'll be listening. Looking forward to it.
Yep, thank you, guys.
All right, appreciate it, Hutton. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with a Hutton and Withrow. Appreciate him, as always, joining us at noon on a Wednesday. Coming up next, I want to get into one thing that we touched on with Hutton, the Titans defensive coordinator search. There's only one name that has come up so far. Is that strange? What do we think about that name? And what do we think needs, what is the future Titans defensive coordinator? What kind of resume do they need to have, in our opinion? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
It's a crucial hire from that specific stance because normally, your first staff isn't the staff that leads to coaching longevity. You make adjustments after year one when you figure out certain fits or certain guys who didn't necessarily live up to whatever expectation you had bringing them in, or someone else becomes available, and then you adjust your staff accordingly. This is one that he's got to hit on. It can be a younger coach. It can be a version of Brian Callahan for the defensive side, but I just assumed that it would be more of a veteran of the defensive game than someone who hasn't called plays before specifically. I don't know if you guys agree, but I also would expect that down in Mobile, there's a lot of the discussions going on about that spot.
That was Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, Caroline, Willie, DeMace. We are broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. So when I brought this up with Hutton, I said that the Titans had only interviewed one candidate. That's on me. I was wrong. The Titans have interviewed two. One, Denard Wilson, the secondary coach with the Ravens, and also Brandon Lynch. The Titans completed an interview with him. He's a cornerbacks coach in Cleveland. He's been in Cleveland since 2020 and has been the cornerbacks coach just for this past season. But
At one time, Lynch was a Tennessee Titan on a not-so-good 2004 team, and he is a Middle Tennessee Blue Raider.
So, you know, just bringing him back home.
You never know.
It's all in the family.
I love every bit of that. Go Blue Raiders, baby.
I don't think that that was why they interviewed him. I hope that was not why they interviewed him.
But it never hurts, right?
Yeah. Hey, you know, go grab one of your favorite places.
He also is a former Saskatchewan Rough Rider.
That is Crispy's team. Crispy is a big Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan.
I'm sure Luke Shen as well, being a Sasky boy, as they call it in hockey.
I'm sure he struck up a conversation with Luke Shen during his interview. But no, but the two things that those two candidates have in common is neither have been a defensive coordinator before. That brings me some skepticism, because you have a general manager in his second year. You have a first-time head coach and a first-time play caller. You are likely going to have a young, up-and-coming, perhaps first-time offensive coordinator. You're going to add in a first-time defensive coordinator into the mix as well. Now, I don't have a problem with a young, up-and-coming first-time OC, because he's probably going to be the little apprentice to Brian Callahan, that he'll be the play caller, and you need to have an OC that's okay and on board with not being the play-calling offensive coordinator. Yeah. But if you look back at the history of first-time head coaches, first-time play callers, you'll see the overwhelming trend is they bring in established defensive coordinators. Like Sean McVay brought in Wade Phillips.
I can see the logic in that, right? That's, right. It seems to say, make a lot of sense from
the
outside.
You be the CEO. You take over the defense. I don't want to have to worry about the defense. You know, you do it. You've done this before. We're going to focus on the offense. That's where my skepticism is. That's a whole lot of newness and a whole lot of inexperience.
If that's how it plays out, you're
across
saying.
The board on the coaching staff, if that is how it plays out, since your two defensive coordinator candidates would both be first-time DCs.
Is Bill Belichick available as the defensive coordinator? I can remember him running some pretty good defenses.
Mike Vrabel. Kidding.
He hasn't been a coordinator that much.
No,
right?
when he was a coordinator, he wasn't very good.
And it is interesting. The Seahawks have made their choice, right? It is neither
Mike McDonald.
Neither Vrabel nor Belichick nor Dan Quinn, who we thought with his ties and the Super Bowl ring, the Legion of Boom, that might be the guy. No. We're down to one job. And
Washington.
So it looks like think about New England, right? All of this hoopla, and Belichick and Vrabel may not be coaching. Looks like they won't be head coaches in the league next year, barring a big twist.
And if Bill Belichick is not a coach in the league next year, will Bill Belichick ever be a coach again?
It's a legit question, I think.
He'll be 73 in the next coaching cycle. I don't know how attractive a coordinator position is to Bill Belichick, nor do I think that hiring Bill Belichick is that attractive to a team right now, because I would guess that Bill Belichick wants a good bit of organizational control.
Well, that's the thing. It didn't look like at the end of the day, and I would love to have been a fly on the wall to listen to the conversations he had in depth with the Falcons, because they courted him for a while and then ultimately said, no thanks. Or Belichick said, I can't do it under these circumstances. But it looks like somewhere in there, they were not willing to hand him the keys to everything and say, make us a winner. We'll stay out of your way. We'll give you the money. Make us a winner. Like that's, I think, probably how he wanted to do it his way or no way. And the Chargers were willing to do all of the things that Harbaugh was willing to do to come out there, right? They are taking his guys. Right?
I have no hesitation that he'll get another job. Zero hesitation.
He will. Belichick?
Yes, he will. 100%.
Saying next year.
Yes. If it's not this cycle, he will for sure have one next year.
Okay.
I will book it if we have that.
It'll be a bold move by whatever team does it. And like,
right?
Do they hand him the keys? Or does he just say, I don't have the leverage I used to have. I have to do it without that kind of power. Let's call it that.
And if I'm an owner, I would not be willing to hand over the keys of my organization and give you complete organizational control when I don't really know how much longer you're going to be coaching. Am I going to give you total organizational control for 3 years just for you to retire and then we'll have to start all over again. And maybe it's worth it if you see a Super Bowl window in those 3 years and you think that Bill Belichick is the guy to get you there. But I haven't seen anything from Bill Belichick in the last 3 to 4 seasons that would lead me to believe that he is that guy that can get you there. We've seen a whole lot of hard-headedness and a whole lot of stubbornness in New England with a way of football that just simply was not working. So I don't blame Atlanta for saying, you know what, no, we're good. If that is, in fact, what happened, Bill Belichick could have said, no, thanks. I don't want to deal with going through finding the young quarterback and developing the young quarterback. But if that is the case, I think that, honestly, Atlanta may have dodged a bullet. And that is crazy. It's Bill Belichick. He's the best coach in the history of the National Football League. But it's just going in a different direction, and I don't know how many years Bill has left as a head coach.
It's a big question going forward, and we got off on this tangent because I was thinking of who are the veteran, experienced defensive coordinators that might be out there on the market. He popped into my head because I grew up watching him run the great Giants defenses under Bill Parcells. That's how he made his name, right? That's how he moved up the ranks for people that can't go back that far. But who are there guys out there? Like I heard Joe Rexroad, they were kicking this around, and he threw out Dean Pease. You know, it's just funny. Like, they're not that many.
But Dean Pease, the DC that Arthur Smith brought in when he was a first-time head coach and a play-calling head coach, that's the perfect kind of guy that you bring in to be the CEO of your defense.
Right, in theory. But it doesn't mean it's going to work. Like, it's not like the Falcons had great defenses or whatever. I'd have to go back and look to see how well Dean Pease did. So I don't know that you have to do it that way. I see the logic in doing that way, having somebody who's really been around the block.
Vic Fangio in Miami.
Vic Fangio is available. That's an interesting name. Mm-hmm. Does that fit with the personnel that you have? These are all questions that Rand Carthon has to sort out with Brian Callahan, because I do think that's part of it. Like, you have to take a look at what you're inheriting and ask, does that strategy match some? Or are you going to have to switch the personnel around a ton anyway and say, it doesn't really matter. Just bring in a good defense and we'll tweak the players to try to fit it.
Because what are you really working with? Jeffrey Simmons, Roger McCreary, DeNico Autry, Harold Landry?
Well, you have Landry for sure. Autry is a free agent. You have to come to a new
term. So you got Landry,
with him.
Simmons, and McCreary.
Yeah, and then a whole bunch of...
You're not working. Yeah, but like, how much of is Elijah Molden really a part of your 5-10-year
plan? I mean, you
better
have
than
him.
Chris Fulton,
you have
because
him.
He's gone. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better than a lot of these practice squad guys you're signing on
sure,
to a regular
sure.
basis. I mean, come on. I mean, you got to give the guy a little credit.
Well, I'll give him credit, but I'm not going to turn a defensive coordinator away because Elijah Molden doesn't necessarily fit in his system. That's what I mean is
right.
Defensively, you have your core of Jeffrey Simmons, really.
And Landry. I would say because he rebounded the way he did and because of his contract, those are two guys I think you're looking at. I mean, to me, Autry, it would be worth taking a look at. This is where I guess you look at your scheme. And Callahan, I remember in the press conference, was saying, look, everything's multiple. Somebody said, are you running a 3-4? You're running a 4-3. He goes, there's not a whole lot of talk like there was even 10 years ago, but definitely 20, 30 years ago. It was either you're playing a 3-4 or you're playing a 4-3.
Right.
Like, that was a big thing. Now it's like you got to be able to do a little bit of both, right? Your base can be. Like, I think the Vrabel was a little shaded more towards a nose guard and having the outside edge guys that were listed as linebackers on the depth chart. But
football guys.
Right. But that's still, there were times where they had a four-man front.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know that it, I think it's a little looser than it was, but I still think it's an important question. Can you match the defensive coordinator's philosophy with the existing players you think are going to be a big part of? What will Jeffrey Simmons thrive in? That's a great
Yeah.
First question to start with, right?
And that's a question.
He's your
I would
best
ask
player,
defensive coordinator prospects.
Yes. How can we get the most out of this guy? The last 2 years, injuries were a big part of the equation, but I would say even last year was not a great Jeffrey Simmons season.
No.
Individually for him.
No.
So how do you get more out of him? We know he's an ultra talent. We know he's a team guy. How can we get the most out of him? That's maybe question number one. And then you kind of go from there.
if the Titans hired one of these two candidates, and look, I don't expect anyone to be, nor am I myself, an expert in Denard Wilson's expertise and experience.
Yeah, I can't tell you anything about Denard Wilson or Lynch other than where they played college ball, where they've been. I couldn't tell you anything else about him.
Overall, just what their resume is. Fairly inexperienced, haven't been defensive coordinators, but young, and Brandon Lynch has been in Cleveland this past year. With Jim Schwartz, if it's one of those two, what would your reaction be?
Well, I think we would all have those same questions. I would be open-minded, and I would say, let's give him a chance, because I can't tell you anything about what makes the guy tick. When we say we're hiring the up-and-comer, we can go down through history in multiple sports where the up-and-comer, you know, I've never heard of that guy. Why are they hiring this guy? Turns out to be something pretty special.
Yeah.
And then the same can be said for the up-and-comer that you question, and he doesn't do well. And you're like, why did they hire that guy? He's not experienced. He'd never been a coordinator before.
Well, up-and-comer is French for inexperienced.
Sure, sure.
It's not necessarily
so that's
bad
why
thing.
You have to trust, you know, the key is you have an eye for talent, right? And that's what we're going to find out about Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan. Do they know in their network who that special up-and-comer is, if that's the direction they go?
We'll get your thoughts on this coming up next, plus some other coaching updates across the league. Bobby Slowick and Ben Johnson, two names that I thought were sure to get jobs in this coaching cycle. But that is not the case. What do we make of it? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 102.5 and 106.3 The Game is officially inviting you to our first ever Super Saturday. Join us on Saturday, February 10th at New Heights Brewery in Nashville from 1 to 5 p.m. for this fun, family-friendly soup fest, benefiting the Nashville Predators Foundation. Enjoy live music, games for kids, and come sample soup from Bavarian Beer House, Mama's Java Cafe, City Tap, and so much more. To purchase tickets and to see all participating restaurants, go to thegamenashville.com/soup. You can also enter to win tickets to Super Saturday. Just text in the keyword soup, S-O-U-P, right now to 615-737-1025.
Yeah, he was always going to be here. He interviewed for jobs. He wasn't ready to be a head coach who called plays. If you're going to have a guy as a head coach who's only called plays 1 year, that's not enough experience to me, even though Slowick did a tremendous job. You know, I just think you need another year like so many other coordinators.
That was John McClain on with Chase and Big Joe earlier today. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. So Bobby Slowick is staying in Houston. I thought through this coaching carousel, this coaching cycle, how many open jobs were there? 7? 8? I thought surely Bobby Slowick and Ben Johnson, at least one of the two, you know, the two hottest OCs on the market, I thought one of the two would get a head coaching job. Bobby Slowick is staying in Houston. And after all of the interviews and the speculation of Ben Johnson to Washington, it was announced that Ben Johnson is staying in Detroit. I think that is wonderful news for Dan Campbell and for CJ Stroud. For both of them staying in their respective places.
I think that makes some sense. You like continuity. I think what a lot of people have said about Callahan was that the Bengals, in retrospect, were pretty fortunate to keep their continuity on their coaching staff through the first 4 years, I guess, of Joe Burrow's career. Mm-hmm. You know, that was probably something that helped him succeed and have success there. So I don't know. It's always interesting. The hot name, Slowick. Everybody was excited about him. Did it for 1 year. I think maybe at the end of the day, people looked at it and said, still real young. Looks like he may have something special, but let's see him do it for another year or two before we say he's ready to be the coach. So as it turns out, right, the way these hires have gone, you mentioned the number of hires that were made. Now, you know, the Patriots made an early choice to elevate the coach in waiting that I think they had some plans to do, Jerod Mayo. The Raiders stuck with their interim coach, and I think that made some sense. So there was two openings that really weren't openings, right? But then I would have bet that Mike Vrabel would have a job somewhere.
Mike Vrabel and Bill Belichick?
I definitely would have said, okay, give me the odds. I'll give you odds that both of them are not going to be coaching. I would have said, "Oh, I will go the other way on that."
Yeah, I was willing to bet big money that Bill Belichick would be the next head coach.
So a lot of these names: Johnson, Slowick, Vrabel, Belichick. You would have said somewhere in the mix, those guys are going to be on there. It just shows you that you never quite know what a team is going to ultimately look for. Dan Quinn is another one that's going to not have a job.
And I do think it shows...
Or not have a job as a head coach.
Right. And I do think it shows a good move on the Titans that they said, this is our guy and we're going to hire him. Because if the Titans thought, okay, we're going to interview him, we really like him, but we'll also, you know, we really like Slovic too, and we really like Ben Johnson too. If they would have waited around, I'm sure Brian Callahan would have gotten hired somewhere else. And then the Titans would have been in a position, assuming that they weren't willing to pay Ben Johnson what he wanted, because Adam Schefter reported that Ben Johnson was not the head coaching lock that people thought, and his asking price spooked some teams. So it's making the assumption that it wouldn't have worked out with Bobby Slowick or Ben Johnson either. And then where would you be? Hiring a coach that you didn't really want in the first place, or being forced to maybe go outside of the coaching search that you initially started? Well, that doesn't put yourself in a great position. Like, where does Washington go from here?
Well, I think, you know, that's a great question, because Washington is trying to, I'm sure, sell that, hey, we're different. We're not the Daniel Snyder Washington.
New ownership, right? This is, we're new manager.
Don't think about the guy that just, you know, was back here and screwed everything up for so long. Mm-hmm. We're new. This is where you want to be. Well, they're still out there looking. There's still some good candidates out there. So what direction do they go? Another thought I had was, considering Slowick's not the coach, Vrabel's not the coach, Belichick didn't get a job. Mm-hmm. Imagine if the Titans had, and look, I was one of the screwballs that was saying, yeah, maybe you should look at this. He's a commodity. Imagine if they were still trying to trade Mike Vrabel.
Oh, boy. That does make the decision.
Think about that. Because they made that decision. I mean, they even thought enough of it to put it in the list of questions that Mike Keith served up to Amy Adams Strunk that she was willing to say. She made a point to say, no, we did think about this.
Yeah.
But here's why we didn't do it. So a lot of people that were squawking, you should have done it. You should have traded him. I don't think there would have been a market.
There wouldn't have been a market.
And I'm surprised at that.
And you would have been forced to wait this long.
Right. They'd still probably be waiting. Fair to say?
I think that is fair to say.
Now, you could also say, well, they could have waited. I don't know who they traded him to. Somebody in the CFL at this point, unless it's trade him to Washington. And you could still get Slowick or somebody, or Johnson. You know, there's still like some candidates out there that are pretty good candidates, so we thought. But it's just interesting to think about.
And when the Titans made the decision to fire Mike Vrabel, there was a whole lot of court of public opinion saying that that was a dumb move, that why would you fire him and get rid of him for nothing when you could have gotten something. And I believe it was Diana Russini, if it wasn't, I apologize, that tweeted out that it was going to be, quote-unquote, too complicated to trade Mike Vrabel. And I think that word choice probably wasn't totally accurate, because then the impression was, oh, well, it's just everything's just too hard. The Titans didn't want to go down the process. The process was too much. You're just going to fire him. You're going to leave picks on the table. When that wasn't really the truth. It wasn't necessarily that it was too complicated. It was too time consuming. That you were going to have to wait a certain amount of time, and you only have a big enough window, and there are 7-8 other vacancies across the NFL that would have given other teams opportunities to interview and possibly even hire the candidates that you liked. And it does make so much more sense now, looking back, that Brian Callahan was probably their guy from the start. That they weren't going to waste any time because they knew who they wanted. And that coach that they wanted, Brian Callahan, was more valuable to them than the picks that they may or may not have gotten from Mike Vrabel. It does make sense. Mm.
Yep. Coaching carousel, it never fails to entertain.
It never fails to entertain. And I do appreciate the obvious feeding of information to Adam Schefter. It's Ben Johnson. You know, he tweeted out Ben Johnson. The price spooked some teams. He said Commanders officials were en route to Detroit for a meeting with Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn when they got word that Johnson was staying with the Lions, per sources. While the abrupt pivot by Johnson was considered surprising by several league sources, he was not considered a lock for the Commanders' job. That, to me, sounds like the Commanders were like, just say that he wasn't a lock. He wasn't a lock. He wasn't a lock. We still are entertaining a whole lot of other coaching candidates. And then from the Ben Johnson side of things, it says, this is Adam Schefter's tweet, Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson has 2 years remaining on his contract with Detroit. His deal was not adjusted to say that money was not his biggest motivation. But you just said that the asking price was too high. Whole lot of people talking to Adam Schefter. Coaching carousel is wild.
I can only imagine what that guy's life is like. How many phones does he have?
Seven.
Seven.
Over, under?
Maybe.
Does he have three?
Sorry, my mic was down. I'm going to say three.
That's not enough.
One personal, one for ESPN, and one for insiders.
Inner
just keep,
circle.
Just keep it simple.
But see, that's where the slippery slope happens. Well, now too many insiders have phone three. I got to go to phone four for the super insiders.
The double secret.
And now
insiders.
We might be up to seven.
Could be.
Because he's been doing this for a long time.
This is true. Maybe that flip phone from 97 still
I got
works.
An old number for Schefter, man. I can't get in. I swear it's still his number.
He's got a Nokia.
You're not deep enough security. you don't clear unless you have phone seven.
If you don't get
That's
the star 67, then you're not on his list. That's just straight up.
Two phones at least is the prerequisite.
I think C-Mace only has one phone.
We'll see. Because he will join
we
us.
We only have one
next.
Number, so that could be phone two.
It could be the
for
Nokia,
Inner Circle.
The flip phone. with the brick breaker on it. The Preds have a big one tonight against the Kings. Last game before the All-Star break. Chris Mason will join us coming up next to preview it and to preview maybe some big decisions that the Predators have coming down the pipe. You have the trade deadline coming up in just over a month. What should the Predators do? Chris Mason will join us coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.